You're listening to Eye on the Ball with Steve Rivera. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Hey, welcome back to Eye on the Ball here at 10:30 The Voice. Trust your local news and talk. Kind of a special treat here. Julius Holt showed up a little late, so now he's going to be involved with the Lamont Hundley Hour, and we're going to talk a lot about football, kind of growing up, you guys dealing with each other, the little kids playing with Julius's group, and Lamont talking about U of A football, helping out. So tell me, how much fun did you guys have last week at the banquet where Julius was like the man of the day?
How much fun we had?
Yeah.
How I enjoyed watching Jewish cry for 45 minutes.
About a speech? Was that a speech?
Well, truthfully, it was the most wonderful speech. You know, it hit your heart. But, you know, we had bets to see if Julius was going to cry the quickest. And, you know, I had like one minute.
2 minutes?
It wasn't even a minute. It was like 45 seconds.
Uh-huh.
Tia was in the back. He timed it. It was 45 seconds. And that's how long it took.
Because I heard it was very emotional. What was your purpose?
My purpose was just talking about, you know, being optimistic and, you know, overcoming odds and, you know, just trying to inspire young people to let them know that, you know, you can overcome any type of obstacles or odds or difficult situations. And Lamont's right. I mean, Ricky called in and he said the same thing. I'm just like Larry Smith. I'll cry at the drop of a dime, which is true. But, you know, it's a lot of emotion involved when you start talking about the trials and tribulations of your life.
Yeah. So what did it? What was the thing that triggered it?
Well, I think every time I have an opportunity to speak to young people, the thing that comes over me the most is I start thinking about my parents, you know, the ones that aren't here, and just to see where I'm at now. And I think that's what gets me every time I have an opportunity to talk about, you know, the way I grew up and the things that took place in my life. And I think it's my mom and dad, you know, they pop into my head and it just, you know, you think about it. I didn't see him. I mean, they died when I was in the fifth grade.
Oh, yeah, that makes a difference,
you know,
of course.
And 30 days apart, and now you're trying to do all these great things.
Do you remember, something of them?
Oh, yeah, I remember everything very vividly, what happened. I was at the church. I think I told the story at the banquet. I was at the church. A friend of mine named Emmett King came and got us, and because I used to clean the pews on Saturday before Sunday's church. And he came and got us because we live right across the street. I get home, go to the house. We lived in a 3-story house. Paramedics are there. I see them bringing my mom down a spiral staircase. Stomach, you know, expanded a little bit. And she suffered really bad migraine headaches. I mean, you know, for years. And, you know, not having to have Christmases at our house, but at my grandmother's, because any type of noise or darkness bothered her. And just seeing that, you know, and you know, it's tough.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I remember as if that was yesterday.
So how did the kids receive it?
Well, I mean,
I think they got a strong message for what Julius gave these kids. I mean, like Julius said, there was quite a few of those kids was probably in the same boat that he was in back in his day, and they presently in this boat. Mm-hmm. And I think it was well received, not only from the kids, but also for some of the adults in the room.
Mm, perspective.
Exactly. I mean, I tell you one thing, Julius has a story to give and story to tell. We're brothers, and we've been together for years, but he really has a strong story to tell, and it's instant. I mean, it's just instant respect once he comes out his mouth and tell his story and put his story in front of people, and for sure, that's what we experienced on Saturday.
Right. So you've been talking about this thing for a long time, the day, and you said you were working on something pretty big.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, so 10 out of 10, you hit it out of the park. I'm not just your speech, but everything was very good.
I felt like I gave my best. I think it was well received. I had a bunch of people come up and tell me, and this is not a knock on people that have done it before. They've been doing this for a few years, and this is by far the best speech that they've ever heard.
Mm-hmm. Well, you got a standing ovation.
Yeah.
Well, he made it.
How long was it? How long was it?
My wife said she was going to go like this and let me know when I was at 15 minutes. I guess I went 30 minutes.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Was it worth it? Sometimes you go to, you know, sometimes you go.
Well, I don't bore you.
It wasn't, I mean, it was a short 30 minutes. It really was. It was a short, impactful 30 minutes. And it was meaningful.
I don't bore people. I try to keep
some people. Yeah. Well, the ones that know you, you're born.
Yeah.
I don't need to hear all those stories 24/7.
So how long have you guys known each other? You guys played a couple of years together?
We've known each other since 81.
Yeah, we came in together. Yeah. I came in as a freshman, and Julius came as a junior college transfer.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And we came in together.
Yeah. We was roommates on the road.
And, how was that?
Well, I was a player, you know, and I was preparing myself for the next day. And,
I stayed on the phone.
And you stayed on the phone all night long.
Really?
Yeah.
And wake up with the phone.
Phone in his hand.
Back in the day, that was a phone. That was not a cell phone.
Yeah, long distance phone.
What would you do? Oh, to home?
No.
Girls.
Yeah.
That's funny because those phones, you know, they were the ones on the wall or in the hotel room.
That's what it was. It wasn't a rotary phone. It was still push buttons.
Right. Oh, this is in the hotel room.
Yeah.
I call collect. I never, you know, so it was the only other person to hang up. And sometimes that person didn't hang up. I wake up and they still on the phone.
That's funny.
Yeah, so we became, you know, brothers back in those days, myself, Julius, Ricky, and Randy. I mean, we all ran together. We all lived together. We all did things together. And we all bond together. And even to this day, we still have that same relationship.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. So when your brother was on maybe 3 weeks ago talking about that, I said, you guys must have this great BS language that you guys have. But let me ask you. So you show up with here and you're friends with him immediately and you're on the road, you're roommates. Give me something right away, your first impression of Lamont.
Well, I can tell you it wasn't immediately because I didn't know them in the beginning. I happened to borrow a softball glove from Ricky because we lived in Babcock. Lamont was scared of me. I can tell you that. It's a true story.
Lamont can tell you that.
I didn't say a whole lot to a lot of people, and I kept to myself.
Because?
Just growing up in inner cities, that's how you were brought up.
You don't trust
a whole lot of people. You don't speak to people because you don't know what their reaction might be to you. But I think Lamont and I hit it off real quick, you know, just when once being on the field together and talking to each other, because we played on the same side.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so we was able to communicate a lot, you know, and he would get on me when I wasn't where I was supposed to. Because, you know, it's one thing about him and his brother, man. They won all the damn tackles.
No.
They won them all the time. So they going to let you know when you out of place.
Yeah.
But other than that, we became very good friends.
What's your first impression?
My first impression of Lamont is he's a jokester, but he's serious. I mean, he's always had a creative mind, even as a football player. I'm like, this guy is a smart guy, you know. And you know, just to hear his story about him having all the brothers and sisters that he had in his family and the way his mom raised him. So we had a connection right there based on the lifestyles that we lived. Him growing up in Petersburg, you know, living with all those kids and his mom having to take care of all those kids and adopting. I think she's adopted over
40, 50 kids.
Yeah, 50 kids. And I went home with them one time to have breakfast, and you eat in shifts. And you can be late if you want. You won't get fed. But that's a true story. But,
right.
And so we had that same type of ideology.
And it was survival.
Yeah,
I mean, it was based on
survival mode.
You know, it really was. You
that's
know?
Cool. So your first impression of Julius?
I was afraid. I truly was afraid
because?
Of Julius. Well, his stature, his body structure, he didn't say much. And he walked around campus with big old boom box on your shoulder, which was, I guess Randy termed it as like a pod, whatever they call these things,
iPod
that you put in your ear. But it was equivalent of that, but it was a boom box. And they had cassette tapes you placed inside of it. And Julius would walk across campus in his own world with particular song playing throughout the day. And it was, you know, quite long. And, you know, the song itself, it has some colorful, you know, words to it as far as meaning behind it. And when I first saw him, I said, man, you know what? That guy right there, he's scary. I don't know if I want to be bothered with this cat. And, you know, but as like he said, we got into practice and we begin to really understand one another and get to know one another. We became, you know, very close and friends. And we had to be, you know, because the fact that Julius was sitting there protecting me and making sure I make all the tackles.
That
was his job to do.
So can you talk about the song? What was the name of the song? Or should we not go there?
You even said the name.
Oh, well, it was Wild Cherry.
No, that's the Chuck Brown song.
Oh, the Chuck Brown, though. It was go-go music.
Okay.
It was go-go music. It was just some serious go-go
and
music.
And he's dropping a bomb on
yeah.
people.
Oh, yeah. And the thing is, matter of fact, they got go-go got recognized this past year or the last couple of months on the BET Awards. It's a serious thing. You go back to D.C., and you ain't hearing a whole lot of rap. You're hearing straight up go-go music. Mm-hmm. And that's and the beat stays the same for 5 hours.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you do.
But the lyrics is what gets you.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Especially when you're talking about that street life.
That's funny. You were a big dude carrying a big box, walking to class.
Yep.
Took 10 batteries to put in that thing.
Yeah, back in those days, batteries.
Them big old D batteries. Took 10
yes.
of them.
Yes, yeah. That's funny. But your relationship is... stayed the same pretty much?
Oh yeah.
I mean, and there's time when we separated because, you know, I was gone out of town, but yet still we stayed close in the process.
So let me ask you, I was interested because I know Muehlbach and Joe Nels and Bob Elliott, those guys. You guys are not from here?
No.
You guys are not from, but you came back here. What's the reason why you came? And this is home to you now. You guys could have easily gone wherever you came from.
Well, I felt that the community itself was so giving to the athletes, mm-hmm. as far as opportunity to, you know, showcase yourself and show who you are once you remove from the university and from the school itself. And, you know, the University of Arizona is the only show in town, mm-hmm. you know. So as far as having that connection with the university per se and being a former athlete, people still, you know, see you that way. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've been removed from the football field 30 years and I still have that association.
That's what
with
I wanted to ask you. Yeah, it opened doors back then.
Oh yeah.
It still does.
Open doors for me every day.
Same thing.
I mean, my thing is coming from where I came from and coming here, this was like a safe haven for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you can go somewhere and you can leave your door open and you got to worry about somebody coming in, that was back then.
Mm-hmm.
And just the way the people treated you, I mean, being a football player or a student athlete at Arizona, you know, the people treated you well. And when I got done playing, they continued to treat, you know, with jobs, supporting me and, mm-hmm. and just making sure that things were okay. And if I needed some help, I knew who to reach out to. So you take some, you hear that spiel, where you come here
family.
As a family, they're going to do this. I can honestly say, you know, what was said to me and told to me by Larry Smith and his staff, you know, stay true to this day. I mean, you know, if you do the right thing and behave yourself and, you know, follow the rules and all that kind of stuff, people are going to stand behind you and they're going to support you and they're going to help you as much as they can.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And that's a simple message, but it's, like you say, still stands.
Well, but, I mean, we had a lot to do with that, too.
Yeah.
I mean, as far as the individuals themselves. I mean, we made sure we created our own family. And it's very, very hard. It was very hard even back in those days as far as trying to break our bond that we had.
Mm-hmm.
And like I say, it was Ricky, myself, Julius, and Randy. I mean, that was our group. Mm-hmm. And even to this day, we had people penetrate it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
but they didn't stick. You know, they didn't stick.
Because it was just you guys.
It's our relationship that we had.
And we looked out for each other. Right. I mean, I remember, and I won't go into no big details about it. I remember I got a call from these three guys like an hour apart. You know, I was back here trying to find myself in Tucson. And I think I got a call at 1 o'clock, call at 2 o'clock, and a call at 3 o'clock in the morning. You were in mm-hmm. Indianapolis. Randy and Ricky were with Denver, and they called me at different times.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, they were concerned about me and you know, where I was heading and stuff like that. And we had those long brother talks and, you know, they reassured me that, you know, this is how you need to carry yourself. This is what you need to be focusing on and blah, blah. Mm-hmm. So that right there meant a lot to me. He didn't have to call me from Indianapolis. And Ricky and Randy didn't have to call me from Denver. But that told me that there were some people out there paying attention to whatever it was I was doing at that time.
And this was before social media.
Yeah. Oh, sure. No, he was still having the phone in his ear.
Exactly. Yeah. And we found out what was happening. So.
Yeah, if social media hasn't been around that long. that's funny. But you graduated?
Yes.
And then you stuck around?
Yes.
And what was your first job after?
My first job was with Vision Quest.
First job was the bank.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, my first job was at.
He knows.
Gary Bernardi, who used to be the coach at Arizona, got me a job at First Interstate Bank. I got into their management trainee program, and I stayed there for a while. And then after that, I ended up going, you know, because I was, again, you know, out there trying to find myself, and I got tired of being a bodyguard and not being promoted to what I felt like I should have been promoted to. So I took a job at Vision Quest just so I could, after I had the conversation with them, so I could find myself. I lived in Vision Quest. I lived in Alfreda, Arizona for 6 months, slept in a teepee. And on the day, that's when I was working. The days I was off, I slept in a trailer that they turned into beds and stuff like that.
Was that for Vision Quest?
Vision Quest.
What was, I don't even know.
It was a rescue program for juvenile delinquents. A lot of the kids we catered to were from California and San Diego, gang members and all that.
You were a mentor?
I was one of the counselors. I was one of the counselor advisors.
It's still out there? No, it's not.
It's a different format now.
Yeah, it's a different,
They're located here in town, but it's more, I think it's more... fostering now, foster kids.
I tell anybody, you want to get into social services back in that time, go work at Vision Quest, making $900, $800 a month.
Yeah. And sleeping outside.
It was, but I learned a lot about myself. I learned, learned a lot.
You probably grew up too. You were probably early 24, 25?
I was young. I mean, because I told a story the other day about one of the biggest regrets I ever had was when, everybody has that vision of playing professional football, and I got an opportunity to go to the San Antonio Gunslingers by way of Mike Berry, who was the offensive line coach here. And, you know, I was involved with a young lady that I thought loved me. I thought I loved her. But 2 weeks later, I walked out of camp. I went to them and told them I didn't want to play no more. And,
because of that?
Yeah, and came back, broke up a week later.
Oh, yeah.
So my
baby, she broke up with you.
I take that back. She broke up with me. So if you think about it, you don't know what would have happened if I'd have stayed.
Don't take this bad, guys, or my listeners. Women have careers.
Yeah.
Careers.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Biggest regret.
That's one of my biggest regrets. I should have stayed.
Yeah. Well, you probably, how long did that?
It's been a long time. Coach Barry and Coach Smith used to tell me that all the time. You should have kept your butt there.
No, and you should have been an offensive lineman.
And I should have been an offensive lineman.
Not a defensive lineman.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Coach Smith, if he was alive, he'll tell you that.
Mm-hmm. So one regret, two regrets. That's not too bad.
Yeah, but I'm glad I played defense. Because I did play offense, and during our practices, I would switch over. Even though I was a starter, I'd jump on the offensive side, and I blocked these guys. It wasn't that hard.
I try to block these guys. He tried to block us.
Let's come back talking about that, but let's take a break real quick here on 10-3 The Voice.
Playing that Chuck Brown.
You guys can rap with it.
Oh, I don't know the lyrics, but that's that go-go for you.
All we know is the beat.
Yeah.
Wait, he said the same thing over.
Yeah, I know, it sounds like it. Hey, welcome. Can I go now? Welcome back to I Am the Ball here on 10-3 The Voice. We try to make you guys feel at home here
today. Oh, you did.
That's funny. You guys like that.
Yeah.
This is the stuff you listen to.
Yeah.
No, wait.
That's the stuff I listen to.
Jerry's listen to.
Yeah, Chuck Brown, he just passed away. He's like 70-something years old. He performed up until he died.
Really?
He got a day named after him, a statue in Washington, D.C., a day. Chuck Brown, matter of fact, they just had the Chuck Brown celebration 2 weekends ago.
Mm. Wow.
It's a big deal.
Well, look at you. You get your own day, Chuck Brown. you're big. Have you had your celebration in D.C. yet? Don't you have to go?
I did that on Friday, flew back here early Saturday morning and did the Coaches for Charity
thing. Look at you.
Evening.
See, 2019. Pretty good at Julius Holt.
Year of the Hope. Yeah.
One more event in Florida in December.
Man. I'm just trying to figure out what I'm going to have for dinner.
me too.
So how was it playing back? I've had your brother. I've had the Dobbins, David Adams, all these guys. How was it playing at that time? And I've said this described, I don't think, with you guys, but those years, and I wasn't here, were described to me as those bring your pail. You guys were a bunch of SOBs playing and tough guys, just trying to win a game.
Well, I had a different personality. I think Ricky and I, we had a total different personality as far as the game. I mean, we was so loose about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, we kept ourselves loose throughout practice, throughout the leading to a game. And I didn't stress myself at all. I just felt I was out running around playing sandlot football and just enjoying myself. There was some players that was on our team that had that mindset as far as,
just
all tough stuff and tough. Yeah. You know, I just, that's not much get me anyway. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm a very relaxed personality.
Even on the field, did you have to switch?
Even on the field, I was the same way. I mean, I would knock the crap out of you and I'll pick you up. And I knocked the crap out of people quite a few times.
Yeah.
It was more of an enjoyment, fun atmosphere for me more than, all of this stress and intention that people put on it.
Do you think, and your brother was the same or a little bit different?
We was the same.
They were the same people.
They
were the jokesters on the team. Yeah. We be sitting over there concentrating and focus and getting our head right. They be telling jokes, throwing apples at people, laughing.
Was that because you had so much confidence in your game? You know what I'm saying? You felt enough whatever confidence.
We were prepared. Yes, sir. Uh-huh. That's one thing that we always were prepared, and we was prepared based because of the coach that we had, and Coach Tom Rogerman. And he prepared us as far as for our opponents leading up to the game. Mm-hmm. You know, so to me, it was like, let's just play. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know what I'm supposed to do. I mean, let's just line up and play. Mm-hmm. And I just felt that, you know, why sit up there and cut your wrists and
worry about it?
You know, all these, you know, snot out of your nose, and I'm trying to wake you up and throw an apple at you or do something to kind of lighten the mood and whatnot. Mm-hmm. It was just, you know, it was football.
So that era, just to not bring your pail, tough guys playing?
I think it was harder.
Back then?
I think so.
I probably agree with you.
I think it was harder, and I think it was harder before we got there. But I just watching the game, the way it's evolving, the way it's being played now, I think it was harder for us, you know, because of the things that you could do. Things you had to do.
Right.
I mean, I don't think we had a lot of guys who felt entitled, who came in with a lot of praise in a sense of saying, you know, I've been told that I was great since I was playing Pop Warner.
Right.
We knew you didn't want to mess up or screw up because the guy behind you was ready to step up and you wanted to give it your all. So I think it was harder. I think we practiced harder. I mean, I think Coach Smith and his crew prepared us for every game. And this is no knock on our offense, but if you go back and look at the defense back then when we played. We were very competitive on defense. Mm-hmm. We just need a little bit of help on offense. Because we could stop the best of them. It was just a matter of could we score enough points. And then there were sometimes these guys had to make big plays to score points in order for us to win.
Right.
You know, it was a different kind of game. Now all this trickery and
the game evolved so much to be, you know, so fan favored.
Right.
You know, let's just score. Get in the end zone. Football becoming basketball to me.
True,
you know, it's just gone in that philosophy. It's more score I can go, more, you know,
points I can put on the board.
You know, the better the situation is. But it's not. I mean, to me, it's a good solid game is 7-6. You know, it's just 7-6. And, you know, and man against man. And you stopping, you know, your opponent from moving you backwards. And you forcing him to go the opposite way.
And you know that's just in the game.
You know it. I mean, you work your butt off for whatever time period, and you feel accomplished.
So you got here in early 80s. That's already 38 years ago. They built this indoor. That campus has changed so much since you guys have been around. You were on campus for a long time, working for just your thoughts on how it's changed since you've been here.
I can tell you this, and Lamont will vouch for this. I mean, I'm very happy to see that they have an indoor facility and that they have a football facility. That was all Coach Smith's dream.
Mm-hmm.
He talked about it from day one, how they wanted to put a facility over there and Bear Down, where it's just strictly football and having football access, how he wanted to have an indoor arena, because when we would go up and play Washington and Oregon, and so, you know, it was a different time. The monies was different. Our program, in a sense, it was a good program, but, you know, financially, I'm sure they were struggling to do some things. So, you know, but that's what he wanted. And he wanted better facilities for us. But, you know, the Board of Regents and whoever these other people are that handles all that type of funding, they just weren't into that. And I think if we were winning Pac-10 championships back then, who knows what might happen.
So do you think, and this is a stupid question, maybe a naive question, because I came in right when Dick Tomey showed up, do you think that the Larry Smith era is overlooked?
Yes.
Because?
I think the Larry Smith era is kind of overlooked like the Fred Snowden. I think we're in that same class. You got Larry Smith, you got Fred Snowden. And not in fault of what's been in front of them, because what's been in front has been really, really good.
Yeah.
You know, been some good football as well as some great basketball.
Mm-hmm.
But we have in those classes, the things that we've done doing under Larry Smith, we did it under some tough conditions too.
Yeah, yeah.
Not only facilities.
Right.
But we was on probation also. Mm-hmm. I mean, the time that we was playing the game of football and playing games, we was just playing for the next win.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't playing for no bowl games.
That was your bowl game.
That was our bowl game.
Yeah. Exactly.
So we couldn't, I mean, there was nothing other than a win was our accomplishment. And we was playing under conditions as far as being on probation for something we didn't even do.
Right, right.
So
no, that's always the case. Right, right.
You know, we was punished for something we didn't even
and
do.
And you had big wins. Big wins.
Yeah. We had huge wins.
Notre Dame.
USC. Mm-hmm. Stanford. We had some big wins.
How were those? Because you guys, on paper, realistically, no one thought. And then you guys beat them.
Well, let me say this. 7-4 back then didn't get you in a bowl game.
Mm-hmm.
You can go 6-6 now and go to a bowl game.
Right.
I think one year we were 7. I think 7-4. Well, we beat Notre Dame.
Yeah.
We beat Notre Dame. And didn't go to a bowl game. Mm-hmm. Guess who went to the bowl game? And I think they were a 500 team.
Was it Notre Dame?
Notre Dame.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you tell me,
right.
You know, as far as the competition goes, and I'm talking about some athletes all across the board, and getting back to Coach Smith, me personally, there are some things I would like to see different at the University of Arizona. I think they need to bring some people in to sit on some of those committees that can speak about some of that history from the Fred Snowdens and Larry Smiths and stuff like that. Because I still believe Coach Smith is being punished because, not looked at because he left and went to USC. But he did what was best for him and his family at that time. He went where they was going to give him what he needed in order to make himself a better coach and to prove to people that if all I need is this and we can win.
Right.
So, but that's just my personal opinion. But I would love to see the university reach out to some of us that are still here that can tell a story, that can share those experiences.
I agree with you. I think that they don't use you guys enough.
I've never spoken at the U of A to their student athletes at all, ever.
Why do you think? And you have connections here.
Well, I think when you bring the new in,
yeah,
they don't know about the old.
No, I totally get it. They don't know.
They overlook the old. Yeah. I mean, they overlook what's the past. They only look for the future, you know, and when you really not a Wildcat.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
No. I totally get it. I know what you're saying.
I mean, no disrespect for any coach that's here, but we're true Wildcats. I mean, we blood, you know, and we got history. We got information to give to people. But, you know, coaches, they just on their next job and next opportunity.
Has that always been the case? You know, Dick Tomey, did he embrace you to come?
Coach Tomey.
What about Dick Tomey? Bakovic probably didn't.
No.
Yeah. What about Stoops?
Not really.
And then
Coach Tomey was the
most generous coach that I didn't play for.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the man had so much interest in you, not as a football player, mm-hmm. as a person.
Because
I didn't play for him.
Right.
So as a person, he has so much interest in me. I mean, I'll see Coach Tomey and the first thing he asked me is, how's my mom? How's my wife? How's mm-hmm. my kids?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's taking a personal interest in a man that didn't even play for you. You know, so when you get that from another man, I mean, that's solid. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is solid.
Yeah.
That's love and respect.
And you see Coach Tomey, I remember what was it called? Cluck You Chicken down there on Speedway.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You can go down there on any given day. Coach Tomey's sitting there having chicken and hanging out and waiting for the bus to come to take him back to his house, which was right down the street.
Yeah.
That's the kind of guy he was. And he was very genuine.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't treat you any different. There was an event going on. I want you there.
Yeah.
I want you guys there.
Right.
Yeah. Hugs,
right?
Kiss you.
Kiss you.
I mean, that's what Coach Tomey was.
Grab you by the shoulders
yeah. like this right. and had that real conversation.
Well, you guys were at his wake.
I mean,
they didn't talk about football. They talked about life.
Life.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, and that's what a true coach is, mm-hmm. a true teacher. I mean, he teaches about, you know, the life skills that kids need to become men. And Coach Tomey, as well as Coach Smith, they had that same personality, mm-hmm. and they wanted to get the most out of you as a young man,
right?
To make sure you become that man,
yep.
you know, within the society here. And I think those two guys kind of mirrored each other.
This is another dumb question because I've never been your type of athletes at this level. Winning, how important was it?
Everything to me.
I think winning was very important across the board. We weren't trying to lose.
No. At the U of A, at the administrative level.
I can't speak for administration, but I can speak for the players. Yeah. We want to win.
I mean, you want to win at all costs.
Yeah,
who doesn't
as an athlete? Yeah, I mean, that's what you're there for.
Yeah, yeah. You're just a competitive person. I mean, I want to win in everything.
Sure, sure.
I mean, I'm playing cards. I beat my kids.
I try not to make it a dumb question, but you know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? It's you know, academics, don't worry about it, whatever. Mm-hmm. Your job is to play it, football, and win.
Well, that's, again, okay, the concept of playing the game to win. Mm-hmm. you know? Yeah, I mean, it's regardless if it's whatever it may be,
yeah.
we line up to win the game.
Sure, sure.
Right. You know, because, I mean, first of all, I don't want to, you know, have that nasty feeling in my belly.
Right, right.
Of
no,
defeat.
I hate it too.
I hate that feeling of, right. in everything I do. I mean, yeah. I hate to fail. You know, so I think as an athlete, we just inherit that. Right. We inherit that and we carry that through our regular life. I mean, it's probably the greatest part of your DNA that you can have as an athlete.
And as a man.
Transfer into becoming
especially
a man.
Especially if you are an athlete, you're taught or not to lose or you're taught to win.
To win.
And yeah. I can tell you this, speaking for Coach Smith and Coach Stomey, the academic side of things wasn't a joke with them.
Yeah, so
they wanted to win, but I've seen both of them remove kids from their teams if they weren't performing academically. Mm-hmm. I won't speak of one player, but I remember a kid who missed a class the first day, and he sent the graduate assistants over to his dorm to knock on the door, and they sent that kid home.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Coach Smith didn't play when it came to that school stuff. Study hall, I'm like, you got to be kidding me. We got to sit for 3 hours, yeah. mm-hmm. and we just practiced for 2.5, and we came at the same time.
Yeah, we did it in the morning.
Yeah, you had to have a certain GPA to get off of probation.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
I mean, to get out of a study hall.
Right? Yeah. Let's transition real quick from that because of the competition. So athletes who compete every day or back in the day, that you don't lose that. Mm-hmm. You don't lose that. So how do you compete every day? Or I'm sure you love competition. So how do you fill that void?
Well, right now I fill that void because of the role that I've been given as the president of Tucson Youth Football and just raising my own kids. I just want to make sure that I'm there for them. I'm giving them everything that I have. I want to be first. I want to be first to the board. I want to be able to reach out and touch as many people as I can, especially when there's things that we need to make things happen. I feel that void just by waking up every day, being thankful to wake up and saying to myself, you know, today's going to be a great day. It's like Jim Lyman, you say, it's a great Wildcat day. So I look at it and say, it's great to be alive. I get up with energy, wanting to do the things I need to do to get my day started.
Well, Lamont, how do you?
Well, I mean,
you have a business. So.
I keep the hunger in me all the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, I always keep this fear of failing mm-hmm. in my belly 24/7. My daughter and I, she was here this weekend, and we spoke about that. And she's in some transitional things with her work and in regards to, you know, you know, how do you keep moving yourself forward and motivate yourself to wake up in the morning.
Right.
And I told her, I said, you know, sweetie, my motivation from the day that you was born has been you and your daughter, and your sister, I'm sorry, mm-hmm. you and your sister. That's my motivation. My motivation is to put my feet on the ground, move forward, and move the needle forward so I can make sure you guys are provided for and prepared for. And I always keep that hunger in my belly because mm-hmm. I'm so afraid that I'm a fail. You know, so, mm-hmm. You know, that's one thing to just keep me motivated and keep me driving day in and day out.
Yeah, it's called a father.
It's the father.
It's called being a father. Being a good father, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because, and we are. I mean, I tell you, we've been blessed to have some great kids and, you know, part of our lives. And we share kids together as far as.
Yeah, he's a godfather to my daughter and I'm the godfather to his daughter.
Really?
So.
Really?
Yeah, so it's great, that's how it's close we are. I mean, you know.
Sure, sure. No, that's why I'm glad I have you here because if people don't listen to this show, I'll put it on the website and blah, blah, blah. But this is cool. I'm glad you were late an hour.
I got my times mixed
because
up.
Because he said, how am I fill an hour with Lamont?
Yeah, I just got my times mixed up, and I was at another meeting anyway.
And I would have never known about this music.
Yeah.
Let's take another break here and come back on the other side, finish the segment. A lot more questions. Hey, welcome back to High on the Ball here on 1030 The Voice. You guys have heard that more than 1,000 times.
Quite a few songs,
yeah. Like, you know the words?
Bear down.
All of it. Yeah, I'm sure you had to learn that right away, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. Fight. Yep.
Yeah.
Friday
you guys
night.
Looking forward to this season?
I am. I mean, I'm looking forward to see how we're going to get better compared to last year.
Yeah.
I mean, those are the things. I'm also looking forward to see you know, what kind of player Tate's going to end up being.
Mm-hmm.
And the unfortunate thing as far as, you know, the little knowledge that I see and know, I think it's going to be a rough year for the kid because he don't have support around him as far as trying to get the ball down the field. I mean, where are you going to get those receivers from? You know, so they better get the ball to Taylor. You know,
right.
You know, let him grind it, and then that's going to open up for Tate. So I just hope he can have a pretty decent year to a better year than he had last year, which was not a bad year because his numbers and stats show that he had a better year.
Just
than
a controversial year. That's pretty much
right.
What about you, Julius?
I'm just a fan of the game. I'm gonna go watch.
So am I. I'm the same way.
Thing is, I can't get all wrapped up in something that I don't have any control over. So I'm just going to go and enjoy the good times. I'm going to enjoy the bad times. I'm going to enjoy tailgates, and I'm going to support Arizona.
That's always been the case or just more recently?
That's always been the case. I mean, I love when the season starts. I love when our team plays.
Mm-hmm.
I'm with them when they lose. I'm with them when they win. I'm with them when they have tough times. I'm with them when certain kids make mistakes, you know, because I understand it. So, you know, because I think if you do anything other than that, you're setting yourself up to become a critic of 17, 18, 19, and 20-year-old kids. And like Lamont said earlier, you're setting yourself up to become a critic of journeymen, which your coaches are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're auditioning for their next job. You know, I don't know what Coach Sumlin would be like if he all of a sudden wins 10 games next year and become one of the hottest commodities in college football. Mm-hmm. Would he stay here or would he take the next best thing?
Right. Isn't that disappointing? Because Arizona, you guys played here, you guys know, it felt as a stepping stone job.
That's what people tell you.
Yeah, that's what the people.
Dick Tomey was not that guy.
No,
he wasn't going nowhere.
It was for Larry. We all could admit that.
Well, but in a different circumstance was Coach. Coach had to move to progress. Mm-hmm. I mean, if the circumstances and administration was behind him, and you know, dollars and cents and facilities, you know, I think Coach Smith had the same personality to be in a community that knows him versus being in a bigger market.
And one of the things you need to understand, too, and I won't give too much in, but you can't provide a contract for one coach that looks very lucrative and then not look at a guy that's made your program in football very sound, and you don't want to give him the same guarantee over 3 or 4 years. A lot of people don't really understand.
Mm-hmm.
That's what drove Coach Smith to leave.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't so much, do I want to stay? Let's be fair and balanced on both sides. This guy gets a guarantee for, and you're telling something different on the opposite side.
And I thought at the time they had year-to-year contracts.
Yeah, it was. I mean, back in those days.
Yeah, but when Lou Dosen showed up, that rule changed.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was a gentleman's agreement.
Whatever you want to call it, a gentleman's agreement.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the table was set to where we was going in a different direction. We're going to promote basketball as much as we can. We're going to drive it home. Yeah.
Sure. And now it's a basketball town.
It's a basketball town.
So let me ask you, and I just lost my thought. Oh, I get it. You've seen, since Dick Tomey left 20-some years ago now, not much success in the last 20 years. You know, maybe a hit and miss here, maybe two. Is Arizona capable, and you guys don't have to answer this because I'm talking about your alma mater now, of competing at the top level to eventually get to the Rose Bowl, eventually maybe even chance at a Final Four game with the big boys?
Well, I think these days and time, it's very hard to get the marquee athletes to come to this community.
Sure. And it's always been the case.
Yeah, I mean, it really has. So you need to get some top athletes to come here in order to move the program to go into the level that you're speaking of, especially football. And not just one athlete. Mm-hmm. You can take one or two in football, in basketball, but you can't do that in football.
Right, you need
you got to get enough on both sides of the field in order to be able to have enough to be competitive with your other schools that you're playing up against. And I just think it's very hard to get those marquee athletes here in Tucson because what the community offer these kids. There's not much culturally, there's not much in the environment that most kids can identify with here in Tucson.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a tough sell. It's a really tough sell. The weather, we'd heard that time and time again. Right now, they don't want the weather. It's too hot.
Right.
And another thing is, you can't be afraid to ask the prettiest girl on campus out. What I mean by that, as a coach recruiting kids, Lamont Hundley might be a 5-star linebacker and he lives in Texas. I heard him. I'm going to go and let Lamont Hundley know I want him. And I'm going to do everything I can to prove to him, if you come to my school along with this guy, and this guy, y'all can turn this program around. I'm not saying they don't do that.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can't limit yourself where you go. You got to go after the things you can't. You think you can't have.
Yeah, I think, like Dick Tomey tried it. I'm sorry to talk about Dick Tomey so much, but he went after that guy, and he always fell short, just a little bit short.
Right. But he tried.
He tried. Mm-hmm. He tried. I don't know. So if you're a coach, you're going after the top guys.
I am. And then, don't get me wrong, I'm going after all the guys, but I'm not going to be afraid to go after somebody that where a high school coach is telling me, coach, y'all don't have a chance.
Yeah.
Well, right. You ain't heard from me yet.
If I'm a coach, I'm going after the parents.
That too.
I mean, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to convince those parents that, you know what, especially if your son look like me,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to make sure your kid is taken care of just like you would take
sure.
care of that kid.
Because mm-hmm.
that's what Herm's going to do.
You know, and I mean, because that's what the mother and the father really wanna
hear.
To
sure.
hear.
At the end of
they
the day, yeah.
Things. Hey, man, point in case. When Ricky was being recruited here at the University of Arizona, I mean, we're talking Arizona, we're talking Virginia. I mean, we never knew what Tucson, Arizona was.
Yeah.
And Tony Mason at that time recruited Ricky and came into our home, him and Coach Shaw and a few other guys, and they sit down and they talk to my mom. And at the time of recruiting Ricky, they recruited me too mm-hmm. because of the fact that they assured our mother that Ricky Hundley was going to be taken care of the way that he should be taken care of as a student athlete.
I can't remember the story. Correct me if I'm wrong. He came on a visit just kind of almost by accident?
No, it was an accident. What happened was we had a coach that went to college here in the 60s or something like that.
Uh-huh.
He went to college here. He was a fraternity guy, one of these fraternities, and he coached us in high school
mm-hmm.
as a position coach. And Ricky had all the opportunities in the world to go anywhere he wanted to go. And as a favor to this coach, Ricky came out here to visit the University of Arizona. We had an aunt that lived here at the time.
Yeah.
So Ricky said it was an opportunity to come meet our aunt, or see our aunt. And he came out here, he fell in love with the community. He canceled trips at Ohio State, and I think he had one out of Michigan he canceled.
But did baseball play a part in that?
Well, baseball was an opportunity, yes, because he was drafted out of high school to play for the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Oh, okay.
Like the 29th or
that
the
makes
39th
sense. That makes
draft.
Sense. Because I heard that he says, well, they won't let me play. He says, who said that to you?
Yeah.
Oh, you can play here.
Yeah. Exactly. The other schools wouldn't let him play, but yes, they gave him an opportunity to play here. One semester, and that was it.
That was it.
Yeah.
And then the rest
he realized football was his future.
Yeah, let me ask you a dumb question, Lamont.
Mm-hmm.
So your brother is considered to be the best player on campus
mm-hmm.
ever.
Mm-hmm.
Your thoughts on that? Your thoughts on that? And being the little brother,
mm-hmm.
how does that not sit with you, but is it a cool thing? You know, because how is that with you? Does that make sense? I don't know if I'm asking it right.
Yeah, I mean, well, am I jealous? No. I think being compared to someone as great is the best compliment that you can ever have.
Uh-huh.
Or having someone in front of you that's a trailblazer and make things happen. I mean, that's the best mentor that you can have in
right,
front of you.
Right, right, right.
And I had the opportunity to have a Ricky Hundley to show me things and show me ways of how to do things, especially in the game of football. So to me, I mean, Ricky always been my hero. You know, mm-hmm. we've been best of friends.
How many years?
We are a year and 2 months
okay.
apart.
Okay.
We always been best of friends. And, you know, he had the opportunity, like I said, to come here, but he had the opportunity to go any way he wanted to go. And out of high school, I said, well, wherever you go, if I'm good enough, I'm going to come too.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope you pick a team that or school that I'm good enough to come to. And right. Arizona, you know, was the place. But, you know, man, I people always say, you know, Ricky this. I mean, to walk in that stadium and see Ricky Hundley's name up on the stadium, I mean, it warms my heart. I mean, it just makes me so proud and grateful that I'm his brother. And by far, his name got up there because of me, too, because he stole my tackles.
Well, let me ask you, did he, now, from Julius's point of view, from you guys, the nicest guys, you were kind of studied and worked hard, did he probably made you the player you are, too, because when you get better by playing better competition,
right.
But did he kick your butt, too?
No. No. He kicked my butt. In what fashion?
And
I was a grown man.
When you were growing up as a big brother.
Well, yeah, he did. He Ricky was one of these guys that was a bully, too.
Oh, I mean, that's why I don't see that. I don't see that.
He was a bully within the home of our, with the brothers and sister. And Ricky, he learned karate. You know, so Ricky decided that he had to practice on people. You know, so he would promise us candy or some stupid and say, let me kick you, you know, because I got to practice. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, silly us. We go up there thinking we can get some candy from him, and he'll kick us around the house and everything.
And no candy.
Yeah, no candy.
And no candy.
You know, he was just that type of personality. But he could never do, you know, our mom always put him in check, though.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. There's always the mom that
put
the kids
put
in,
us
check.
In check.
So how good was he, Julius?
Ricky?
Yeah.
Real good.
That's perfect. What about this guy?
He was real good too. I mean, they were two peas in a pod. I mean, I tell people always ask me how do I compare Ricky and Lamont. You know, Ricky was just a brute kind of dude. He wanted to take everybody on. He had big old chest. Lamont was more finesse. You know, Lamont knew if he had a guy 6'6", 6'5", 300. Lamont ain't going to try to run through that guy. Lamont going to be smart. He's going to be the smart football player. Whereas Ricky will try to run through him.
And take him and the running back on.
Most of the time it worked, but he was built for it. Mm-hmm. Whereas Lamont playing, you know, Lamont uses noggin a lot, you know.
Yeah.
He outsmarted people. So, you know, it was a finesse guy and a guy that was just brute.
So we have 3 minutes left, about 2 minutes to talk. Your best moment on the field, Julius?
Against USC, playing against Marcus Allen, and I also think playing in Notre Dame. You know, I think I was the captain in both games, had a good game and played really well. And, yeah, I think USC and Notre Dame were probably the two best things I remember as a player.
Mm-hmm. Lamont?
LSU. We played LSU down in the pit. We lost. You know, but I think I ended up having like 27 tackles because we stayed on the field.
Oh.
And probably Utah State game here where we beat them pretty considerably. So those two games stand out more as far as individual performance.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then those big victories, obviously.
The ASU always.
Yeah. Yeah. Still today, yeah, probably. Big.
ASU.
Yeah, ASU, but the USC victory and then
you know, I really was on the short end of the SC. You know, I was a freshman and stuff that, so I wasn't on the field as much. And then, you know, playing in Notre Dame, I was a sophomore and got a few snaps in. So.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, good careers, yes.
Mm-hmm. It was fun.
Great memories.
It was fun.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, not only the game, you know, gave us an opportunity to play, but it's brought us together as friends and brothers, and
yeah,
we sure always
long
be there.
Term.
If you wouldn't be here today, when would you see each other next?
Probably tomorrow, this weekend.
When is your daughter playing softball again?
Yeah, we talk to each other. We talk to each other all the time. Or if I don't call him, he'll call me.
He'll come out of my house and go to sleep. My wife kicks him out.
Hey, can I say something real
Please,
quick?
Please, you got time.
Hey, we've got that Tucson U football scholarship banquet coming up October the 13th at Casino del Sol. We're trying to get as many people as we can to show up. We're also looking for a sponsor. And we'll do it in thirds if people are interested in.
And how much are you looking for?
We're looking to raise about $10,000 for the scholarship banquet. It's our 50th anniversary. We're going to recognize kids from ages of 7 all the way up to 13 and 14 years old. So Andy Morales is going to be our keynote speaker, and it's a big event.
How do they find you? How do they find you?
They can call me at tyf.com or they can look. They can call me, go on our website and get my number and give me a call. But it's tyf.com.
I'm going to put this on the website so they'll have another chance to listen to it. Great show. Thanks for messing up and coming in late.
taking
your time. Right, right. Yeah. Great to see you guys. Always good to see you guys. I love the show. Thank you. And good music.
Yeah,
good music. Yeah. Thanks, guys. Thank you, Bob, for the music. Mm-hmm. And we'll see everybody tomorrow.